to This Is Baseball. I'm Brandon Johnson, and this is going to be a Kansas City Royals-focused episode. I feel like there's a lot to talk about for the Royals over the first almost month of the 2024 season, and I'm excited to do this episode because it's the end of April and the Kansas City Royals are still worth talking about. And that has not been the case for, almost 8 years. 2017, really. When the World Series core departed is really the last time this team was worth talking about past April. Or even up to the NFL draft. So, as of today, April 23rd, the Royals sit at 13-10 with, according to FanGraphs, a 25% chance of making the playoffs. So basically a 1-4 chance of getting into the playoffs today. Now, honestly, I'll take those odds. Obviously, 25% chance doesn't look that great, but when you look at the Royals from 2023, and it took them till the middle of May to win as many games as the Kansas City Royals of 2024 have already won. It's notable. So, significant improvement from 2023 to 2024. So, what's different? Well, the short answer is basically everything. Only 7 players from last year's opening day roster returned to the 2024 team. So the Royals front office said, we've had about enough of that and we're going to do something completely different. But let's break it down. So starting with the offense, the lineup, most of the hitters that you need to be producing are doing exactly that. Salvador Perez, the veteran on the team, the one player on offense that has a World Series championship and obviously has been with the Royals the entirity of his career, is producing at a very high level. Currently batting .341, on base percentage .400, OPS of .998. Doing everything you want your veteran catcher to be doing at the plate. Now, I know that being a catcher, you don't typically think of somebody being an offensive powerhouse, but that's exactly what Salvador Perez is, who, oh, by the way, hit his 250th career home run and put him 10th all-time among catchers in career home run numbers. Mike Piazza's at the top with 399. Salvador Perez is just behind Jorge Posada. So Salvador Perez is going to continue to climb that ladder. Can he hit 150 more home runs and surpass Mike Piazza for most home runs by a catcher in a career? If he stays healthy, I don't think it's crazy. I just don't know how much time Salvi has left. Now, let's move on to the young superstar, Bobby Witt Jr., who obviously got his payday by the Royals this offseason, batting just under .300, on base .347, OPS .910. Just kind of following Salvador Perez's lead. Bobby Witt Jr. is living up to his contract already. He is just producing, again, at a high level. Vinny Pasquantino, coming back from his injury this season, has quite honestly looked good. And I didn't really know what to expect out of him coming off of an injury, but he's definitely impressed. He's a mainstay in the Royals lineup, and he might be next on the list to get a big payday from the Royals. Now, MJ Melendez is another one of those young players that he's doing okay. He's having a little bit of a slump right now, but obviously that's something that's going to happen to every player during the regular season at some point. Michael Garcia, who's been the leadoff batter for a lot of the Royals season, is not producing the way that you want him to right now, but overall, really happy with most of what the offense has done. I know it seemed like they've been kind of hit or miss, and that's a little bit true. I think something that the Royals need to do is, one, capitalize on having runners in scoring position, and They need to play small ball a little bit better, which obviously goes hand in hand with scoring with runners in scoring position. They've had a lot of power. They've hit a lot of balls out of the park. That's where a lot of their runs have been generated, and that's not really what the Royals are built to do. So we'd like to see them get runs in a different way that doesn't necessarily mean that the ball has to leave the ballpark. Obviously, you're not upset about that, but can you play a little bit of small ball and not have these offensive kind of outbursts and then just go silent the next day, then have this big offensive explosion again and then turn around and go silent? Let's talk about their defense for a second. The Royals are best defense in the league right now. They just now gave up their first unearned run, so not committing a lot of errors, and when they do, they're getting out of those jams and not doing any further damage than just the error. So definitely good to see, and that's honestly something that the Royals have thrived on, is building a team that is going to be one of the better defensive teams in the leagues. I mean, that's a part of why they were so successful on their World Series runs, was because they built a team that was good defensively, great defensively. I mean, there was a point where you could make a case where maybe five Gold Glovers from this roster at one point in time. And now let's move on to the pitching staff. They currently have a 3.26 ERA, a WHIP of 1.25, and then an opponent's batting average of 241. So all really solid numbers. Starting pitching staff has been phenomenal for most of the season. Just over the last couple days, Cole Reagans and Brady Singer both had rough outings. But outside of that, the Royals starting pitching staff has produced a lot of quality starts. Seth Lugo has been the best starter on the roster so far. Michael Wacha has been serviceable. Alec Marsh has obviously been impressive. And then Brady Singer and Cole Reagans, those young guys, are doing what you want them to do. Now, obviously, like I said, they both had back-to-back rough outings, but that's to be expected with any pitcher. You can't have, you know, a perfect 30 starts in a season from your starting pitcher. You just hope that they don't pile up and just have one bad start after the other. You hope that you can kind of have a bounce back after a rough outing. Now, I've heard a lot of people talk about the Royals' 13-10 record and kind of discount it because they've spent a lot of the schedule playing the Chicago White Sox, who are going to be one of the worst, if not the worst, team in Major League Baseball this season. They played the White Sox 7 times. They've won 6 of those games. And they've already finished their season series against the Orioles and lost it. They won 2 games out of 6. I think it's unfair to discount the Royals' early season success and say, well, their schedule has been a little bit beneficial for them. Well, honestly, if you look at it, it hasn't been. They play 6 series, in the first month of the season that are against playoff teams. The only teams that they're playing that aren't are the White Sox and the Tigers. But other than that, it's been an incredibly tough schedule, and the Mets are in that as well. But I think if you look at the Royals against the White Sox, clearly a bad team. We all know that. The Royals beat up on the White Sox. I think good teams beat bad teams. Good teams aren't going to lose to bad teams. And I think that's what the Royals are doing here. When you get to the end of a season, let's say the Royals win 84 games, but the majority of those games are won against non-playoff teams or teams that maybe weren't as good as teams that the Royals lost to, you don't get discounted for that, unless you're talking tiebreakers. But I think, honestly, good teams make a living off of cleaning up against bad teams. If you're a good team in a terrible division, looking at you, the Dodgers, you have a lot of games against four teams that are honestly pretty bad. Now, excluding last season, but point still stands. Like, you're going to have an easier schedule, technically, because you get to play the same teams that aren't as good more often than other teams. So I just think, number one, with a balanced schedule, everybody plays everybody. But I don't think that we can sit here and go, oh, well, they beat the White Sox, so is it really for real? Like, right now, yes, it is. 13-10 in the last full week of April for the Kansas City Royals is exactly what you want out of your ball club. Sure, are there some wins in there that probably got missed? Yeah, I can look at this schedule and see a few times where some games got away from them, or, you know, Will Smith was allowed in the game and blew it or almost blew it. Which, that guy, if the Royals are serious this year, they got to put a countdown on that dude's time with the team, because he has just been an overall negative for this ball club. But I'm looking at FanGraphs projected standings, and it has the Royals at finishing at 84 wins. As the Cleveland Guardians at 96 wins. Now, Cleveland Guardians have gotten off to a great start. I don't think there's that big of a gap between the Royals and Guardians at this point. I do think, however, if the Royals are going to win 84 games, they are firmly in the hunt for one of those wild card spots. But I just think that the gap, again, between the Royals and Guardians is smaller, and the Guardians are more of an 85-win team, and the Royals, maybe they are an 84-win team. But even if, let's say, the Royals, they do win 84 games and they miss the playoffs entirely, if they win 84 games and the Guardians win 85 games, that means that the Royals are playing meaningful baseball all the way through the regular season, even though they came up short, which, again, is significantly more than we would be asking for, because right now it's just, hey, be average, be relevant, and that's exactly what they're doing. So it's hard to even look at some of the shortcomings that we've seen so far this season and be upset about them, just because I think they're so far ahead of where we thought they were going to be this season, just given the recent history and really a lot of unknowns on this roster coming into this season of how were the new acquisitions and members of the roster going to mesh with a team that has just really only seen losing baseball over the last 6, 7, 8 seasons. And, you know, particularly last year where they lost 106 games and were just horrendous from the word go. Now, let's move off of the Royals for now and just hit a couple of highlights from the weekend. I think the biggest one for me is Shohei Ohtani surpassed Hideki Matsui for most home runs by a Japanese-born player. Now, Shohei Ohtani has obviously broken that record, and he's going to obliterate that record by the time his career is over. Now, I don't need to sit here and tell you how good of a player that Shohei Ohtani is or is going to be, but his stats and records that he may or may not hold by the time he is done playing is going to be absolutely insane. And I am very happy that I get to live in a world where Shohei Ohtani is playing baseball at the same time as me being on this earth, because it is definitely a sight to see pretty much every night. Now, I'll leave with this. So, Aaron Boone got ejected in the first inning of the game the other night because a fan was squawking at the umpire, and the umpire thought it was coming from Aaron Boone or the Yankees dugout, and it wasn't. Aaron Boone was just standing there, and you have the camera on Aaron Boone. Whenever he finally gets ejected, the umpire was like, "That's it, you're out of here." And you can literally see Aaron Boone sitting there saying absolutely nothing. He's just standing there. And the first time it got brought up as a warning, Aaron Boone said it wasn't me, and the umpire, Hunter Wendell, said, I don't care who it was, you're not going to tell me how to do my job, basically. And it happened again, and he sent Aaron Boone packing, which this is not the first time that an umpire has ejected somebody for a completely stupid reason. I think most notably is the one where JT Realmuto got ejected for, I don't even know what. Just look that one up. It's really stupid. But, yeah, I think the problem here is these umpires, I think, have really fragile egos, and Hunter Wendelstedt's feelings were hurt about whatever was being said to him, and he just assumed that it was coming from the Yankees dugout, and he ejected Aaron Boone very early into a game. And I think this is a situation where, like, the umpire was very clearly in the wrong. I feel like they could have just gone to a video booth or video review and listened to the argument that Aaron Boone was giving for it not being him, and doing just a slight investigation and seeing that, oh yeah, it wasn't Aaron Boone or anybody. It was a goofy fan just heckling the umpire. But instead, yeah, Aaron Boone got to sit in the dugout in the locker room for the rest of the game that had basically just started. So do better, Major League Baseball umpires. I know that's a tall task because they don't really do a whole lot right. But we'll get there eventually. Now, that is all I have for this week. Thank you so much for listening. I will catch you next time.